We started with a series on Old Testament characters last week. Brother R.D. Singh shared the life of Abraham last week. And today it is Women's Day. And Ruth is not just a character, but a book in itself. And where do we find Ruth? Soon after Judges. And it's very rightly placed as well. Why do we say it's rightly placed? Because if you look at the first chapter, verse 1, it says, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled," which means the story of Ruth took place when the judges ruled. So that, so much for the timing. But we also need to understand the scenario when the story of Ruth played out. And that scenario is explained well in the book of Judges. In fact, the last chapter of Judges, chapter 21, verse 25, and it says this: "In those days, there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes." So that's the scenario. So when did the book of Ruth enact itself out? It was during the time of Judges. And what was the scenario during the time of Judges? There was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. The dark time of moral collapse. There's no governance. Imagine we staying in India, we are in a scenario like that. There's no party ruling, there's no prime minister, there's no president, there are no rulers, there's absolute chaos. Everyone is doing what they feel like. That's a dangerous scenario. Now, that's the background of Ruth. Now, if you look at what the big picture of Ruth, where Ruth has just four chapters, so it's a small book. And it'll be impossible to go through the entire story, but we will summarize the key concepts from the book. And the big picture of Ruth is in the last chapter of Ruth, chapter 4, verses 21 and 22. We read that just now. Ravi read that just now. And it says like this: "Salmon begot Boaz, Boaz begot Obed, Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David." What does that mean? It means that Obed is the son of Ruth. Do we see that? Obed is the son of Ruth. Ruth was not going to have any children. 10 years of childless marriage. They didn't even know that a person called Boaz existed at that point of time. She was heading to a black darkness of future with her mother-in-law, Naomi. And then there was Boaz. Then there was an open womb. Then there was Obed. And then there was Jesse and David, in whose lineage was the Son of God, Jesus Christ. That's the summary of Ruth, the book of hope. This happened when? During a horrible time in history. And that's the story of the Bible over and over again. Horrible darkness, no way out. And God is preparing something. Have we experienced that? Dark days in our lives. When we think that everything has collapsed, God is actually preparing something. We're living in chapter 1, and chapter 4 is coming. Yeah? And we are all hoping that Divya of Dwarka will raise people like Boaz and Ruth in the days to come. Let's move through some of these verses that tells the story of the initial story of Ruth. Verse 1 to 5 is the misery of Naomi. There's a famine, and the family has no food. But they solved the problem. How did they do that? They left Bethlehem and went to the city of Moab. Now, Naomi knows where famine comes from. It comes from God. Psalms 105, verse 16 Moreover, he called for a famine in the land. He destroyed all the provisions of bread. God causes to rain. He causes the sun to shine. The grain grows and we have bread to eat. If rain doesn't come, we don't have food to eat. So now we know where the famine is coming from. And therefore, she says, God has dealt bitterly with me. So because there's a famine, what does the family of Naomi and Elimelech do? They decide to go to Moab. Moab is a different country, very closely related to Israel. Yeah, we all know it. What is the history of Moab? Moab are the people born to Lot through the relationship of incest, right? So even though they're cousins, close relatives, Moab was a perennial enemy of Israel all through. And so it's actually surprising that they should have gone to Moab all the way from Bethlehem. Moab, a pagan land, we wonder if they should have gone there. They had foreign gods. And so obviously when you're going to a place like that, you're playing with fire. And they did. Their sons married women from Moab, a dangerous thing that could draw them away from God. And if you were Naomi, you would actually tremble, because you will begin to see what is coming. What happened? Her husband died. Her sons and daughters were barren for 10 years in their marriage. And the boys died. And then you and I were Naomi. We would have said, well, we shouldn't have come to Moab. It was a bad decision. There's a lot of blows. Ek tamache ke upar agla tamacha. Blow after blows. You and I would be feeling this too. I don't know how many of us have experienced this. Ek khatam nahi hota, dusra shuru ho jata. You know, one problem gets over and perhaps is not yet over. It's getting over and you have the second one in hand. And then the second one is getting over. You have the third one in hand. You know, it keeps coming, blow after blow. How many of that can we bear? No wonder Naomi is crying. What is she crying? The Lord has dealt bitterly with me. She's right. The Lord has done bitterly with me. Verse 6. The Lord has visited his people and given them food. Wow. So which means that there has been rain in Bethlehem. And Bethlehem has now food. The famine is lifted. Judah has food again. The Lord gave. The Lord took it away. And the Lord is giving it back again. So Naomi decides what? To return to Judah. But with whom? With the two daughter-in-laws. With the two daughter-in-laws. And the journey begins, or about to begin. And verse 18 to 13, Naomi changes her mind. What does she do? She tries to persuade both her daughter-in-laws to turn back. Go back to your homes. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go, for I'm too old to have a husband. In order to understand the meaning of this cry, we need to understand the custom that reigned during that place at that point of time. It was a custom that if a man dies with no children, then her brother could marry the women in order to provide a seed in the name of the brother. That was normal practice. But then when Naomi's both sons dead, Naomi didn't have children anymore. And even if she had to wait for a remarriage, Naomi was old enough to have children. And even if she had children, Naomi is saying, would you wait till that child grows up and then you marry again? So it was kind of an impossible situation. So ideally, Naomi is saying, look, if you are committed to the name and lineage, then you are committing yourself to widowhood. So what I suggest is you turn and go home. तुम मेरे साथ आओगे तो तुम्हारी जिंदगी बर्बाद है. Don't come with me. Go back home. Verse 13. Know my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone against me. In other words, don't come with me. Because if you come with me, all I have experienced from God, which is bitterness and opposition, you're going to experience the same. So go home. This is where Ruth is astonishing. We will think it's crazy. What happens, we know. Orpah left. Ruth clung to her. Ruth has made up her mind. No more arguments from Naomi is going to change her mind. Naomi is presenting Ruth's future as dark and bleak and hopeless. Ruth instead walks straight into darkness. And instead of moving away from it. And this is the situation where what Jesus says in the book of John, I believe. He separates the goats and the sheep. You know that? And this is the situation where the Redeemer separates the Orpahs and the Ruths. Yeah? Orpah listened to the description of her future from Naomi. What did she do? She left. It's too dark. Bada panga hai yaar. Main nikal hi jata hoon. She left. Ruth stared into darkness and said, I'm there. I'm not going. That's strange. And perhaps there should be some explanation behind that decision. So let's read Ruth's, her own words, verse 16 and 17. Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. And then listen to this. Your people shall be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die. And there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also. If anything but death parts you and me. Astonishing. What does it mean for Ruth to go with Naomi? Ka matlab kya? What does the future look like for you and me if we were to assess this particular judgment or decision from Ruth? Ruth is going to leave her family behind and her land. Where does she belong from? From the land of Moab. So she's actually leaving her family and her land. And what is she entering into? A life of widowhood and childlessness. Both of them, both Naomi and Ruth, doesn't know Boaz yet. God knows it, but they don't know it yet. Right? Third, Ruth is going to an unknown land. It's a new place, new people, new culture, new language. Her commitment to her mother-in-law is stronger than marriage. Look at verse 17. What does she say? When you die, I will die and be buried. Where does that come from? Where does that come from? I think it comes from verse 16. She says, your God will be my God. That's a big statement. Naomi has presented a bleak picture of being a friend of God. Naomi's testimony of being a child of God or a friend of God is rather hard. Verse 13, the hand of the Lord has gone against me. He has dealt bitterly with me. What a witness. What a witness, right? If we were to witness about Jesus Christ like this, hey, come to Jesus Christ. He deals bitterly with his children. He crushes his children and his church and marriages. Crazy. crazy testimony. And Ruth seems to have seen something glorious in this God. I don't know how. There's no description out there. Perhaps her husband, Chilion, was a good man. Or maybe they read the Bible or the law of God at their homes. I don't know. There's nothing. I mean, we can assume a lot of things, but we just don't know. But she knew God now and tells Naomi what? I'm not going to leave your God. The God of Israel is my God. Your covenant God is my God. I'm staying with your God. After you are dead, I'll stay with your God in your land with his people. That's what who I am. That is my new identity. That's my new identity. Isn't that an identity of being born again? You and I never knew Christ. And when Christ comes into our life, we are a new creature, or we are a new creation. Our identity is different. Amazing. In the light of all that Naomi spoke and experienced. So what did they do? They do in verse 19? They return to Bethlehem, a town of horror and a town of hope. We know what Bethlehem is known for. What is it? Jesus was born there. But then at this point of time, Bethlehem still was famous, was known. Why? Jesus was born hundreds of years later on after this incident. You know what Bethlehem was known for? Jacob's wife, Rachel, was buried in Bethlehem. And so Israel knew that. People at that time knew what Bethlehem was famous for. Rachel was buried in Bethlehem. So what does Naomi do? Naomi takes Ruth and goes to Bethlehem, where they were from originally, before they left to Moab. And then she cries out again. Bethlehem sees Naomi and said, "Is that you, Naomi?" And Naomi continues her cry. She says, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me." Look at the statements. She says, "I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again empty. Why do you call me Naomi? Since the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me." And Ruth is listening to this. And Ruth might be saying, "Oh no, here you go again. Ab to bas karo." Right? What does Naomi say? "Don't call me Naomi." What does Naomi mean? Naomi means pleasant. And she's saying, "Call me Mara instead." What does Mara mean? Bitter. Bitter. And Naomi is right. She's actually bitter now at this point of time. After all she has experienced, she's bitter. Now, Ruth had to listen to all this again. And what a witness to God. What is Naomi's theology here? Is the sentimental views of God in our culture any day? I don't know whether you have seen this. I've seen people walking into churches, singing songs with hands raised up and with tears in their eyes. Sometimes I feel those are tears of joy, tears of worshiping a God who saved. But you know, many a times, there may be people who are doing that. I'm not saying it's not. But many a times you will find people who are crying not as an act of worship, but because they're so overwhelmed with the pain that they go through in life. And they come to church, they sing songs, and they cry out. But as an act of worship, instead of praising God for who he is, they'll be crying because the pain that they're going through is overwhelming. And Naomi knows this for sure. Naomi knows that God exists. Naomi knows that God is sovereign. And Naomi knows that God has gone forth against her. God exists. God is sovereign. He brought a famine. He took away my husband, took away my children, and now he has brought me back empty. That is Naomi's cry. And Naomi knows these things. But there's a problem. What's the problem? She's right when she said God exists. God does exist. She's right when she said God is sovereign. Indeed, God is sovereign. Because he does what is right and he does what he wants to do. He's sovereign. But she's wrong when she said, he has brought me back empty. Why is she wrong? You know, when you go through pain and struggles in life, there's a tendency to be blind to the signs of hope that God puts before you. We are so overwhelmed by the pain and the troubles that we are in that we don't see the signs of hope. Why is Naomi wrong when she said she brought that empty? Because indeed she was wrong. She did not come back empty. She had Ruth with her. She had Ruth with her. And Naomi also seems to be forgetting the Bible. She forgot the story of Joseph. Look at what Joseph had gone through. Sold by his own brothers. Falsely accused. Put in jail. Joseph could have cried, "The Lord has dealt bitterly with me." He didn't. He became the vice president of Egypt. And then finally he saves his own brother and his family and an entire nation called Israel. Naomi forgot all that. I came back empty. I once had husband. I had sons. She is right in the sovereignty of God, but wrong to be blind to the sign of God's merciful purposes. Signs like Ruth, she couldn't even see in spite of having her in her midst. And there was one more sign that she missed. Verse 22, they came to Bethlehem at what time? At the beginning of the barley harvest. Oops, listen, she had left Bethlehem. Why? Because of the famine. Why is she coming back? Because it's a time for harvest. The statement is so laden with hope, but Naomi cannot see it. She's become blind. She can't see anything but pain. She can't see anything but disaster. She can't see anything but struggles. She's used to that now. Struggle after struggle after struggle. She can't see hope, even though it is right in front of her. There's a barley field owned by whom? A man called Boaz. A good man, an older man, a righteous man who kept pure all these years. And what does Ruth do? She goes to glean in this field because she's poor. Paisa chahiye, kaam karna. She needs money. She goes to Boaz. Boaz sees her, likes her, admires her, and wonders about her. He makes sure that there is enough left over for Ruth to have. And Naomi tells her who this man is. Who is he? He's a kinsman. Kinsman meaning he's a close relative. Wow. Now Naomi thinks perhaps Boaz could do something which she hadn't thought about. Now at this stage, Naomi thinks, "Arey yaar, aisa bhi ho sakta hai." She begins to think at this stage. Ruth and Boaz, they are pure. They're careful. They're so upright. And they're so delicate about all that is happening around them. So delicate. Naomi tells Ruth what to do. What does she say? Go and be close to those men. Boaz sees her, and what does she say? She advises, sorry, what does he say? Boaz advises Ruth not to go close to the younger men. Lafda hai, paaso mat jana. Yehi pe rehna, mere logon ke saath. Theek hai, we will take care of you. He was going to guard this woman, make sure that she was kept safe. And then Naomi does one thing. What does she say to Ruth? Ruth, ab ek kaam kar tu. Go down there, show yourself to Boaz, then at the middle of the night, and ask him to marry you. Goodness, what a crazy idea. Imagine you and I have daughters who are of marriageable age and say to our daughters, beta tu ek kaam karna. इसके घर में जाना कब? रात को 12 बजे अकेले. What a strange idea. What a crazy idea. Thank God for in his sovereignty, he protected even that crazy idea. It could have gone so wrong. So wrong. Instead, it didn't. What does Boaz say? Uh-huh. Not tonight. Not tonight. We'll make this right. Hold on. Let me find out if there's a kinsman closer to me. And if not, I'll have you. Okay? I'm old. You're young. You're a Moabite. So be it. But if everything falls in rightly, I'll have you. What a decision. What a decision. Israel was never advised to mix with foreign nations. Never. And look at what God is playing out here. This drama, peeche se jo drama khelte hain, upar wale, right? You and I can't see it. And that's why Paul says everything works out good for those who believe in Christ. Everything works out good for those who believe in Christ. Next day, what happens? Boaz searches for the kinsman and he finds one. And when he finds one, what does he do? He asks him, "Bhai, can you take up this responsibility?" Kinsman says, "No." What does Boaz do? Boaz marries. Everything in the right process. You follow the right process. You didn't adopt any shortcuts in life during times of trouble or during times of situations like this, when there was a time for decision making and it had to be done soon. He waited, checked out the process, followed it, trusted God to provide in his own manner. Boaz married Ruth. What happened after that? God opens her womb. Ruth had been married for 10 years. She was childless. Now, Boaz marries Ruth. God opens her womb. And what happens? They have Obed, who bore Jesse, who bore David, and finally, who bore Jesus Christ. Look at God's plan. Look at God's plan. Don't be blind when mercy drops around you are falling in the desert of these days. Don't be blind. Naomi couldn't see the mercy drops. She couldn't make any sense out of Ruth. She didn't know what barley harvest meant. Why do you think a story like this is there in the Bible? So that you and I don't make this mistake. We have enough of struggles in our own life. We have so many troubles in our life. But don't make the mistake of grudging against God. Let's not look to paracetamol and azithral and diclofenic tablets to heal our pains in life. They are limited. We run for shortcut solutions. Chutkara chahiye bhai. पैसा नहीं चाहिए, चाहिए वी डू एनीथिंग फॉर दैट, तबीयत ठीक नहीं है, बट वी कांट वेट ऑन गॉड. वी हैव मेनी अदर स्ट्रगल्स, स्ट्रगल्स रिलेट टू रिलेशनशिप्स एट होम, एट वर्क प्लेस, इन द चर्चेस, बट वी लुक फॉर शॉर्टकट, वी वॉन्ट इमीडिएट सोल्यूशन. But God has his own way of dealing with things. Let's learn from these solutions. There's an old hymn, the wordings of which goes like this. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense. Understand that. Okay? Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. And then another stanza goes like this. Blind unbelief is sure to err. Scan his work in vain. God is his own interpreter. He will make it plain. We don't sing songs like this in GBF Dark. Unfortunately, I wish there were more hymns that are being sung. So many meaningful songs to only want to dig into the depths of the ocean. You're there, you are everywhere. I cannot run away from you. Don't try to run away from him. And the only way to run from God is to run to God. Run to him, not away from him. Chapter 1 of Ruth. Famine, foreign country, foreign wives, barren marriages, dead husband, dead sons, lost daughter-in-law. This is where we live now. Right now, this is our situation. But listen, it's time for barley harvest. Those who have eyes, let them see. Remember what Jesus used to say? Those who have ears, let them hear. Those who have eyes, let them see. We don't have any idea of how long God is going to keep us in chapter 1. No matter how long we are going to be here, please don't grudge against him. Talk to him. Speak to him. Pour out your troubles, no issue. He will listen to you. But never do the mistake of grudging against him. Don't do it at the expense of seeing Ruth and the barley harvest. Don't do it at that expense. Bear the mighty hand of God. Patiently trust his sovereignty and know that DBF Dwarka is going to be more mighty in God's word, more mighty in the presence of his spirit, and more mighty in the fruitfulness of our life. Fruitfulness of the church and devoted to as the virtuous wife. And I just want to kind of, I'm not going to read those passages, but I'm going to take 8 character traits of Ruth that are also highlighted in Proverbs chapter 31. Okay. If you're making notes, you can just make a note of it and you can read it on later on. The first character trait is devoted to her family. Ruth was. And you find that in Ruth chapter 1, verses 15 to 18. And relate that to Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 to 12 and verse 23. The second character trait is delighting in her work. Ruth chapter 2, verse 2. And then Proverbs chapter 31, verse 13. The third character trait is Ruth was diligent in her labor. Ruth chapter 2, verses 7, 17, and 23. Proverbs chapter 31, verses 14 to 18, verses 19 to 21, and verses 24 and 27. Okay. The fourth character trait is Ruth was dedicated to godly speech. Ruth chapter 2, verses 10 and 13. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 26. The fifth character trait was Ruth was dependent on God. Ruth chapter 2, verse 12. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 25, the second part, and verse 30. The sixth character trait was Ruth was blessed with care. Ruth chapter 3, verse 3. Proverbs chapter 31, verses 22 and 25, the first part. The seventh character trait was Ruth was discreet with men. What do you mean by discreet, by the way? Discreet means careful in what you say and do so as not to cause embarrassment or difficulty for somebody. Okay, this is one of the definitions of discreet. That's a dictionary definition. Ruth was discreet with men. Ruth chapter 3, verses 6 to 13. Proverbs chapter 31, verses 11, 12, and 23. And the last character trait that you find here is delivering things. It's 29, the books in the Bible. Some of these books are simple stories. And people wonder, bhai, isse nikalta kya samajh mein nahi aa rahi, to sirf ek kahani hai, right? And the book of history is Genesis. You have then poems, you have literature, you have Paul's letters who are rich in theology and warnings, and you have letters in the New Testament that are so rich, fully full of advices. And then you have John writing something about revelation, about what's going to happen in the future. And the light of all that, you place Ruth, a small book, four chapters, small story, but with such a rich message that connects to our daily life. That connects to our daily life. Today's Women's Day. But then, just because Ruth is a woman doesn't mean that today's message applies only to women. It applies to you and me. Today's world, living at a time of so much of uncertainty and so fast-paced and with so much of corruption, with so much of immorality and with the downgrading of morality in every life and people trying to justify one's life through the means of all that they do. The people are living according to what pleases them. And that is today's life we see around us. In the midst of that, we are called to be people like Boaz and Ruth. Steadfast to the core, looking straight into the darkness of this world, but in and through the darkness, see the hope that comes. God bless each one of them. Amen. Over to you, John.